Today we'll be talking about the sacking of Bob Grant, the only mainstream talk radio host to at least occasionally speak the truth on racial matters, by Disney's Jewish owners. We'll be talking about the reason why best-selling author David Irving can't get his latest book published by St. Martin's Press, and the insane political correctness in Holland today. New York City is, for all practical purposes, lost to the United States. It has become a third world city, with its official structures and institutions ruled by an elite consisting of a certain Middle Eastern tribe and their white overseers, and its streets ruled by the increasingly racially unidentifiable non-white gangs. It is an uncivilized and dangerous place to live and work, unless you are wealthy enough to hide behind the security systems and bulletproof glass of the skyscrapers and limousines. In New York City, the controlled media are unable to maintain the pretense that everything is still all right and that the American people are still in charge, as they do in their lie casts to the rest of the country. To make such an outrageous claim would lose the media masters all their credibility in New York. For New Yorkers know better. They know far better than most of us what a sewer this country has become. In such an environment, it was inevitable that someone like Bob Grant would be on the air. Bob Grant was an extremely popular talk show host on New York's WABC radio, the 50,000-watt flagship station of Cap City's ABC. Bob Grant dared to acknowledge that there were racial differences and that there was a racial problem in this country. He never, ever implicated the self-chosen, of course, in the decline of America, but he did state openly the obvious truth that the man in the street had waited to hear for so long, and that made him extremely popular. He stated, quote, "Minorities are the Big Apple's majority, and you don't need the papers to tell you that. Walk around and you know it. To me, that's a bad thing. I'm a white person." Close quote. He stated, quote, "We have in our city, we have in our state of New York, we have in our nation, not hundreds of thousands, but millions of subhumanoids, savages, who really would feel more at home careening along the sands of the Kalahari or the dry deserts of eastern Kenya, people who, for whatever reason, have not become civilized. Am I the only one who makes that observation? No, certainly not. Perhaps I express it more directly, more candidly, far less euphemistically than politicians would." Close quote. Bob Grant even dared to question our present policy of allowing the worst among us to breed us and themselves into more and more poverty and misery. Quote, "The only hope we have is something that we're not brave enough to do. But if there is a brave new world of tomorrow, they will enact the Bob Grant mandatory sterilization plan. I wonder if they've ever figured out how they multiply like that. It's like maggots on a hot day. You look one minute and there are so many there, you look again and wow, they've tripled. Why not apply the laws of eugenics, the laws of heredity as discovered or proven out by Gregor Mendel? Why not take those laws and use them on the most important species of all?" Close quote. Bob Grant also went beyond mere stating of the obvious truth that everybody knows but no one is supposed to say when he exposed some of the shady and subversive connections of that New World Order saint, Martin Luther King. He went so far as to state the simple facts that made King a phony, fraud, and a fake, and he characterized King's moral state accurately when he called him a scumbag and a bum. Hidden truths were leaking out to the hoi polloi, and we all know that we can't allow that in our free and democratic society. Though he disclaimed any affiliations with or sympathy for so-called racists, Grant did allow pro-white individuals to speak without being cut off in a few instances. This enraged neo-Marxists and leftists, like the group calling itself fairness and accuracy in reporting, Jesse Jackson and Jewish attorney Alan Dershowitz. Their agenda, you see, cannot stand the light of day. And Grant, though on an obvious leash himself, was letting too much light in the room for their comfort. They had been clamoring for Grant's removal for months, to no effect. Cap City's ABC, though heavily Jewish, had businessmen at the helm who valued profits more than Zionist or leftist goals. And Grant was extremely popular and extremely profitable for ABC. Even after the businesses ADP, Amtrak, Continental Airlines, Delta Airlines, First Data Corporation, New Jersey Transit, Blue Cross, and Xerox had been pressured into canceling their ads on Bob Grant's program, he was still on the air, popular as ever, and the ad revenue kept pouring in. But, as reported on this program, things have been changing at ABC. ABC has been purchased by the Jewish-owned and controlled Disney Company, making Disney arguably the largest media empire in the world today. Instead of ultimately reporting to ABC's Thomas Murphy, everyone at ABC was now reporting to Disney's chairman Michael Eisner and Disney's president Michael Ovitz, both Jews. Soon ABC Radio had a new Gentile overseer, Robert F. Callahan, Jr., described by the unofficial Bob Grant homepage on the internet as "Bob, I never met a protest group I didn't cave into, Callahan." Knowing that they would now have a more sympathetic and a more kosher ear, the censors intensified their demands to axe Grant after the Disney takeover. When Jesse Jackson demanded Grant's termination, Michael Ovitz wrote back in true Machiavellian style, quote, "Although we have already determined how we will handle this situation, I nevertheless appreciate your consideration and concern." Close quote. Within a few days, Jackson, Dershowitz, and the rest of the gang were outdoing each other in taking credit for their obscene victory. Grant was fired. According to an inside source at ABC, the conversation between Callahan and Grant went like this. Callahan: "Bob, you've been with ABC for a long time and are a valued member of our company. Unfortunately, times are changing, and views such as yours, which were once acceptable in the media, are now unacceptable. Don't get me wrong, Bob. I agree with a lot of your views, but your views have become, well, controversial. You know, Disney owns Cap City's ABC now. Disney is a large, family-oriented company. They don't like controversy, and frankly, Bob, you've become a bit too controversial. I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but you have to be off the air. Here is the deal we're willing to offer you. We will continue to pay you in full through the end of your contract, if you agree to leave immediately and also agree the separation was mutually agreed to. If you do not agree, we will stop paying you and claim that your actions were so racist and irresponsible they brought disrepute onto this company and thereby constituted a breach of your contract. Sure, you'll sue us, but that will take thousands of dollars and years to get through the courts. You know, we have dozens of lawyers on our staff. We can tie this up in court for years. Bob, you're 67 years old. Are you really up for a fight like that? And even though you'll win in the end, is it really worth all the legal fees, time, and above all, the aggravation? Take the money and run, Bob. It's best for you, best for ABC, and best for Disney. Grant: I feel terrible about this. My life has been WABC for years. This isn't the way I hoped things would end, but it looks like I really have no choice. End of transcript. Bob Grant has now been offered a time slot at rival New York station WOR. I await reports from my listeners in the urban jungle as to whether and how much his leash has been tightened. And I have a few words for the censors. You cannot suppress the truth. by shutting down a source of truth, incomplete and partial though his revelations were. You merely drive people to go farther and farther from the lapdog media to find the truth they crave. And you confirm their suspicions about the controlled media. Are you listening, Mr. Eisner?
This is American Dissident Voices. Why don't you write today to the fine radio station that carries this program and let them know that you appreciate their belief in freedom of speech. Remember, the enemies of freedom never rest. Don't let their voices be the only ones this station hears.
From author Ingrid Rimland, we bring you the story of David Irving and his fight for the historical truth. David Irving, as anyone knows who has looked into World War II, is one of Europe's finest mainstream writers and historians, with more than 35 impressive titles to his name. Not all that long ago, Irving was easily one of the world's most monetarily successful scribes, sashaying around England in a splendid brown Rolls Royce. He would routinely land himself grand multi-million dollar deals because he has this knack for painting World War II both from an historically captivating and convincing angle, yet with a deft and gleaming pen. He wrote such books as Hitler's War, Churchill's War, Goering, and Dresden, the runaway bestseller on which his worldwide fame is based. I would also note that he is one of the most thorough experts in the field of original historical documents and has made many important discoveries. He was and is, by all accounts, one of the most successful authors who writes in the popular historical vein. For decades, his books were used as handbooks in military colleges. It was raining manna from Publishers Row, and David Irving had the spoon. In the mid-1980s, Ernst Zundel, scouting everywhere for expertise and information, started courting Irving as a potential witness for his upcoming Great Holocaust Trial No. 2. Ernst had read many of the Irving books and liked and admired the author, a feeling which was not mutual. Up to that time, Irving had hardly heard of Ernst. He knew the usual distorted stories about this wild-eyed fool in Canada who claimed that there was no Holocaust. He was leery and distant with Ernst. What's more, he was a firm believer in the Holocaust. He had told a few snippets that didn't quite fit into the conventional wisdom of what had happened during World War II, but no one would have counted David Irving in those years among the ranks of the revisionists. David was vacationing in Florida when he was contacted by Zundel and agreed to be a witness for the Zundel defense. He wasn't inexpensive either, but Zundel needed him. A nonchalant David Irving arrived at the Toronto airport in May of 1988, sun-bronzed from his vacation, in a Hawaiian shirt, sunglasses, jogging pants, and sandals, and without suit, dress shirt, or a tie, and looking just like the successful laid-back writer that he was. Ernst didn't think that was attire suited to impress a judge and jury, and so he stuck him in Doug Christie's business suit. They had the same long legs, and since he didn't have an extra tie, dispatched someone to the Salvation Army corner store to buy David Irving a 75-cent tie, and David, being a good sport, slung it around his neck. Here you have Providence foreshadowing. Every news clip, every photo emanating from that trial that made such history worldwide shows David Irving, British multimillionaire, clad in his borrowed suit and his Salvation Army tie, while having no idea, I am sure, that on that bright and merry day, he marched straight into his own personal, financial, and political demise. The rest is in the transcripts that came out of the second Zundel trial. The famous author David Irving, renowned expert at documents, took one look at the Leuchter findings, which prove that mass gassings could not have taken place at Auschwitz, as alleged. And he knew that he saw what he saw. Moreover, he turned out to be a principled, courageous man who testified to what he saw. He publicly repudiated his erroneous view on what is called the Holocaust, right on the witness stand. He testified to what these findings meant for history. It is to his eternal credit and shows the measure of the man that he has stuck to his own guns and has been ever since, and at great costs both monetarily and in his private life, one of the world's most often quoted and hence most vilified revisionists. He has paid dearly for his stand. The lavish literary contracts soon dried up. Book clubs and paperback contracts diminished. His lecture tours were sabotaged. Like many a revisionist who dared to speak the truth based on the facts they find, he has been hounded, harassed, threatened, hurt, intimidated, banned from Australia for what he said, and barred for life and sent in handcuffs out of Germany for what he might have said there. A vicious effort has been made to tie him to the Oklahoma City bombing. A smear book recently came out describing David Irving as a sexual deviant. It just goes on and on. There is no end to it. And the latest now is this, sent to us from the offices of the Institute for Historical Review. Quote, alert. We just received word that St. Martin's Press is going to cancel the upcoming book by David Irving on Goebbels due to the extreme pressure to which it has been subjected since announcing that book. A spokesman at St. Martin's would not confirm or deny that the book was being canceled, but did say that a press release was being prepared at this moment, and if not ready by tonight, would most likely be ready by Thursday morning. The toll-free number for St. Martin's is 1-800-221-7945. Irving's editor is Tom Dunn, extension 776, close quote. And it happened. St. Martin's, so craven in their capitulation to Jewish censorship that they claimed not to have read the book they were about to issue, canceled publication. So what you witness here is yet another example of escalating Holocaust terrorism and subsequent self-censorship by publishers, in the same vein as the attack on Marco Polo in Japan, a magazine which tentatively questioned Jewish accounts of World War II and subsequently ceased publication. Just think about it for a moment. Is this censorship going to stop people from reading Irving's books? Of course not. His books will be ever more in demand, and yet one more of many question marks about what really is behind the Holocaust to warrant such drastic and desperate steps will get imprinted in the public mind. Who is it that tells you and me we cannot read what David Irving writes on Goebbels? What's in it that's so dangerous? We'll want to find that book. We'll want to tell our friends who'll tell their friends, and on and on and on. Which just goes to show, force begets counterforce.
This is American Dissident Voices, brought to you by National Vanguard Books. Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946. USA.
In Holland, political correctness has reached a frenzy of fanaticism that even Orwell would have found incredible. In Holland, there is a nationalist political party called CP86, or Center Party 86. According to party spokesman Tim Moody, quote, the CP86 developed from an old party which was founded in the 1980s under the name Center Party. The word center meant not capitalist and not communist, not right, not left, but center, an early form of third-way politics in Holland. In 1984, there was a split, and later, the more radical faction reformed under the name Center Party 86, or CP86. In the beginning of the 90s, there was a large group of young people who became members of CP86, and then the politics became pretty much radical, more or less like the British National Party in England, close quote. Recently, leaders of CP86 have been put on trial for, believe it or not, their party's slogan, which is, our own people first. Now, putting someone on trial for a four-word slogan Sounds insane. But where multiracialists rule, the legal system could make the Red Queen blanch. How could this have taken place? Again, Tim Moody explains, quote, "In September 93, our houses were searched. The houses of our members of our board, the Presidium. They tried to locate weapons and all sorts of illegal things, but since they didn't manage in that, we were put on trial for our propaganda, which we used in elections in 1994, mainly for town councils and for parliament. They are now trying to convict us on our usual very mild form of propaganda. I think the people in the States wouldn't understand what the fuss is all about. The only thing we say is that there's more black criminals than white criminals. We don't even say it's a biological thing. We just happen to see things clearly. On the 2nd of May, 1995, we were convicted as being a criminal organization with some heavy fines for the members and for the party, also jail sentences on probation. Of course, we will take this to a higher court because we think if we really get convicted, there will be no more nationalist opposition in Holland and probably elsewhere in Europe because the European Union is working closely to ban every form of nationalist movement. One of our leaflets was against having a multiracial society. Another leaflet read, "Don't let yourself be discriminated against just because you're Dutch." And another, on which is one of our main slogans, read, "Our own people first," which is also the slogan of the fourth biggest party in Flanders. And if they ban it in Holland, perhaps they'll try to ban the Flemish Bloc also, which means nearly 20% of the Flemish voters will be convicted as criminals. Close quote. Last year I mentioned this trial on American Dissident Voices. You heard the results. They were convicted on the charge of using an illegal slogan. The victims of this travesty of justice have appealed and are patiently waiting for another turn in a court system which has obviously been captured by the enemies of their people. We wish the men and women of CP86 well.
Breaking down the walls of censorship, this is American Dissident Voices. Send $1 and you'll receive our catalog of suppressed books and tapes, including books and tapes you can't get anywhere else. Send $1 to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
Remember, please subscribe to Free Speech, the monthly newsletter for American Dissident Voices listeners. Send $40 for a 12-issue subscription to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. That's $40 to subscribe to Free Speech, to National Vanguard Books, Department R as in radio, P.O. Box 90, that's 90, Hillsboro, H-I-L-L-S-B-O-R-O, West Virginia, abbreviated WV, 24946, USA. Overseas listeners can pay with international reply coupons or an international postal money order. Until next time, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you that when you look at the night sky, remember Orion. Our race is our nation.